Welcome to the Epic Echo, a podcast designed to reflect the lives and voices of our community and hosted by the Eastern Panhandle Empowerment Center, bringing you new episodes every month.
The content of today's episode may be difficult or triggering for some listeners to hear. If you need support, please call our 24/7 helpline at 304-263-8292.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Epic Echo. I'm your new host, Brittany. So today I have a special guest with me. His name is Keith. He is the hate crimes advocate here at Epic. Keith, do you want to introduce yourself a little bit?
Absolutely. So like I said before, I'm super nervous, but I'm also super, super excited to be here. So thank you for having me. My name is Keith Pollard. I use he, him pronouns, and I am the hate crimes victim advocate at Epic, and I also lead our LGBTQ task force.
Yes, we love both of those. We're so thankful for you here. Keith does amazing work with us. So do you want to talk just a little bit about what your role is as the hate crimes victim advocate here and what that entails?
Absolutely. So Katie, our executive director, applied for a grant months and months and months ago and was awarded it, and then hired me on to help build a new program that serves victims of hate crimes in the Eastern Panhandle, so Jefferson, Berkeley, and Morgan County. I came in and helped build a brand new program because there was a gap in services for victims of hate crimes. There are no community-based services in the state of West Virginia that specifically serves folks who have been the targets or victims of hate crimes. So we are working now to fill that gap and provide connection to legal services, connection to mental health services, connection to housing, safety planning, court advocacy, and so on, to help people get through whatever process they choose to go through to address the crime that has been committed against them.
Nice. Yeah, I love that. I love everything that your position does. And I know it's definitely a position that is needed at every agency, I would say, and it's a newer position created. So I know that there's a lot of agencies that don't have hate crime advocates yet, and I'm really excited that we do and we get to take that next step into the universe of healing and helping our community.
Yeah. The outreach for this program, or for starting this program, has been really fun. Seeing the excitement about the services when we introduce them to other organizations has been very motivating.
Yeah, hopefully we can be the trendsetter here, and other agencies in the area will be able to also realize that, like, this is a need, and we'll be able to show them statistics and be like, this is how many people we've helped, and this is why it's really necessary to have more of these positions.
Exactly. I hope so.
And then with this position, you also have a helpline, correct?
Correct. So we have a 24/7 helpline that an advocate, so myself, will get back to you within 24 to 48 hours. You can leave a voicemail, just giving a brief description of what services you're seeking or what you have been through. And then I will reach back out to the person to get them enrolled into our services or give them a referral. You can also text that line. I also respond to text. So the number is 304-283-0660.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure that we put that out there for anyone who needs it or needs assistance and didn't or wasn't aware that we had that. I know we're trying to revamp the website and add things, and I know that our social media pages have a little more information, but as far as like looking on the website, they might only see like our 24/7 helpline that's just our regular hotline versus the one specifically for victims of hate crimes. So
yeah, We're currently working on the branding process. So hopefully by the time this podcast is out, we will have a landing page on the website specific to this program. So all of that information should be there.
Super stoked about it. So what led you to this field of work?
Oh, great question. So for a period of time, I'm originally from West Virginia. I'm originally from the Eastern Panhandle. I was born and raised here. But for a period of time, I lived in Maryland, right outside of DC. I was working in restaurants, and I kind of just was really unfulfilled. I just kept feeling like I could have a greater impact in the community. So it was suggested to me to start doing some volunteer work, which I did. And then that volunteer work led me into doing the human services work professionally. So I was working in DC for about 6 years, or maybe a little over 6 years, in homeless services. So I was working in residential programs supporting LGBTQ young people who were experiencing homelessness. I moved back to West Virginia, was looking for ways that I could use the skills and knowledge that I had gained in DC to help my home community out. And then this opportunity for this role presented itself. So I applied and here we are.
That's amazing, Keith. That's really wonderful. I love that you were able to learn something from somewhere else and bring it back to help this community. And I think I definitely felt the same way. I knew when I started in like the social work field that I did that because I wanted to be able to help people within our community and give back to our community. So I feel like
I love that. I feel like there's often like a mass migration from this area. And then people don't come back to, you know, give back those knowledge and skills that they gain from other places. And I feel like we would be so much better as a state and as a community if we had more people come back home and, you know, build the community up from what they have learned and gained from other spaces.
I 1000% agree, although I do definitely understand why some people don't come back and help, because some days it feels like if we were somewhere else, maybe we would be able to make a little more of a difference.
I absolutely agree with that.
But yeah, I agree. If people were more willing to come back and try here, maybe we could progress more than we have thus far.
Yeah.
So originally we were going to record this last month in June and discuss Pride. And I do feel like because we're both on the LGBTQ plus task force, it's still a conversation that should continue to be had year round, obviously. Specifically as far as your position and the helpline goes, have you seen an uptick in hate crime since Pride started last month?
So not specifically to our program. Again, we are super new. So I think that there's still not a lot of people that know about our services. There's still a lot of outreach that we have planned and that we need to do. But I would say nationally, absolutely. I know that last month, the Human Rights Campaign put out a national emergency because of the legislation, the anti-LGBT legislation that has been introduced, and all of the things that come with that type of legislation being introduced. I think LGBTQ people across the nation have felt a lot less safe lately, a lot more targeted. So yes, I absolutely think that hate crimes against LGBTQ folks have increased since Pride Month. Have we been seeing that locally? I do not think so. But I also think that there's more work that we need to do to ensure that the community knows that there is someone here to support them and that these services are available.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. I know like advertising about this program is probably our biggest setback currently. And if we could get it out there more, I think we would be able to service so many people if they just knew that we had this program available.
I agree. I believe that there has been a gap. I believe that we are filling that gap. And I believe that a lot of people have been looking for these services for a long time, and the services just have not existed. So I believe that we are going to have a great impact once people know that we exist and that they can access these services.
Absolutely. Is there anything you think that we could be doing different to try and get the word out more, or anything that, like, if anybody's listening that has some connections in the community that they could do to help?
I think that we have built some really great partnerships. We work with the Berkeley County NAACP Legal Redress Committee, and they send us referrals. I joined their weekly meetings, so they are a great support to us. EPIC already had a very, very strong relationship with Shepherd, but Shepherd has graciously allowed me to also come in and be a part of that partnership. So we have a lot of outreach that we're going to be doing at Shepherd on Shepherd's campus coming up. So I think that that will be really impactful. I know that there's a lot of issues that fall under hate crimes that college students deal with, especially on campus.
Yes.
So I think that that is going to be very impactful. But if anybody is listening, has an organization or works for an organization that you think your clients or the people that you serve would benefit from our services, would benefit from training, would benefit from prevention education or anything like that, please reach out to me. My email is Keith, K-E-I-T-H, at swcinc.org. I am absolutely willing and excited about partnering with more organizations in the Eastern Panhandle or even throughout West Virginia to get the knowledge of these services out there.
Yeah, I hope that maybe we're able to make some more connections soon, especially once we get the website back up and running properly with all of the correct information. That will hopefully make a decent impact on things if we have at least the correct programs that we're currently offering and their numbers and emails and all of that.
Yes, I agree.
So as far as your position, and you may not have this answer yet, and that's okay. Is there any specific group or specific marginalized group that you feel like you're currently servicing more than other groups? Like, do you feel like you get more calls from like the LGBTQ population or like the poor and homeless communities? Or
I would say right now the population that we are serving the most is Black and Indigenous people of color. I think that the majority of the calls that we have received are from Black community members that have experienced hate in some kind of way in our community, whether that is a wrongful termination, harassment from a neighbor, harassment in school, examples like that. Are the calls that we have supported people in thus far.
Yeah, I'd love to say that I'm surprised, but seeing as how unaccepting our community can be at times or all the time, I'm not shocked. It's awful, and I wish that it wasn't happening, and we're hoping that with your position, we're able to at least offer more resources, if not hopefully see a decline in this happening. Like the more people we help and the more people we hold accountable, hopefully we can see some decrease in the reports that we're getting. But I'm not I'm not shocked that it's mostly the Black and Indigenous populations. I did think we'd see more, not necessarily more from the LGBTQ plus population, but we would have like more reports overall from that. But, you know, a lot of people don't want to report, and, you know, everything that we do is only, it goes off of the information we're given and the people that want to report. So I know numbers are much higher because there's a lot of people out there that either don't know the program exists or know, and they don't want to say anything.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, because that makes me think about like recent legislation, like I was just talking about, but then also like the recent Supreme Court decision that the business does not have to serve like LGBTQ folks.
Yes.
Like thinking about the fear that LGBTQ community members might have or do have, even accessing services when they've been the victim of a crime. Like folks are like really scared these days, and they don't know what's going to happen next. Like, are we going back to the 60s where, you know, you can be fired from your job for being out, or you can be jailed for being out and stuff like right. that. Like that is unfortunately a reality these days. But I will say that our services are completely confidential. We will not share your information with anybody that you do not give us permission to share with. I believe that we have created a very safe space in our offices. You know, security is very important to us. And we are always, you know, making sure that we are aware of our surroundings, safety planning, and so on. So if you do know of our services and you are scared, please reach out and we can work through that.
Yeah, I'm really glad you made the point about creating safe spaces in our offices and stuff, because I do feel like within our community, Epic has grown, and the name that Epic has built for themselves has grown, and a lot more people know about the Eastern Panhandle Empowerment Center. But I could totally see how someone not knowing like how it works when you come in would be nervous about going in. And like, we have everywhere that we've posted anything about how they're confidential and free services, but if I'm just walking past the building, I'm not, you know, I might be worried about going in, because what if they do record something or send something to someone else, or the environment in the office of like, if there's a lot of people. And, you know, I agree with you. I think we do, I'd like to think we do pretty well with like sectioning it off. And like, if even with people who share offices, whatever advocate you're speaking with, the other one will leave and give you that space to just speak to the one person confidentially and
yeah.
create that safe environment.
Yeah, I agree. So just, you know, everybody listening, know that we are very intentional about the spaces that we create. So please, if you are in need, contact us.
As a hate crimes advocate, what can you do for people in our community that have been affected by a hate crime? So like after they call and report to you that a hate crime has occurred, like what does the next steps look like?
Yeah, so we will complete a full intake, which is a questionnaire to get all of the information that we need in order to be able to help the individual. We've tried to create a very person-centered approach to the way that we are rolling out these services. So the process is really led by the individual. There's no mandatory reporting to police or anything like that. You know, some programs that I know of make it a requirement for the person to have filed a police report in order to access services. That is not something that we do. So really, however the individual wants to go through whatever process they choose, is what we would do. Now, if the person comes and they don't know anything about processes, court processes, contacting the Human Rights Commission of West Virginia, the EEOC, or anything like that, we will give them the options of what processes they could do that would benefit them, and then allow them to choose what they think would benefit them best. And then we will support them through that entire process. Also during that process, if they need connection to housing, we will get them connected to housing. If they need mental health support, we will get them connected to mental health services. Safety planning is also very important to us. So we will safety plan with almost everybody that enrolls in our program. And then anything else that the person may be in need of, and we can meet that need, or we can connect them to a resource that will meet that need, we will do that.
Yeah, thank you for explaining that. I think for people who report, the process can be a little daunting, and they come in and they want to talk to somebody because they just want someone to be there for them, but they don't know whether or not they have to report. And I think it was really important that you put in there that, like, we're not mandated reporters as far as hate crimes go. And, you know, it's confidential for a reason. You get to tell us, and then we like to empower you for you to make the next step and decide what you want to do after that. And if you want us to be there for you while you make a report, or be there for you when you go to court, then that's something that we do. But if you just wanted to talk to someone about it and explain what happened because you just need to talk to somebody about it, or maybe you want resources for counseling services or even counseling services within Epic, you know, you can just come and do that.
Yeah. Like I said earlier, I have a housing background, so we've tried to make this program very low barrier, if that makes sense. There are very, very, very few, if any, barriers to getting somebody connected to our program and into our services. Yeah.
I love that. I think that's really important, because a lot of people that are going to require your services have already faced so many barriers to get to where they are at this point. So to be able to make it an easy process for them to be able to get into this program is really important.
Absolutely. And I think we also know that the data that we have found, which is very minimal, does not reflect the need in this state. And we also know that there needs to be a lot more education and a lot more training to our state leaders, our lawmakers, our law enforcement around hate crimes, what hate crimes look like, how to report hate crimes, how to charge hate crimes, and so on. And I think that is going to be a lot of the work that we do as well, because I think once that education happens, then there will be a lot more community support around hate crimes and victims of hate crimes.
For sure. And I think, you know, especially because of what legislature that's passed recently, a lot of people aren't aware of, like, what they can and can't make reports on as far as hate crimes go. Like, a lot of people are going to experience it and then be like, oh, well, there's nothing I can do about it. And there is, and we're able to explain that, but the lack of education and knowledge, because, you know, it's not like people want to, unless you're in this field, it's not like people want to go out there and be like, hey, this is what you can do to help yourself and better your community and the people in it, because they don't want people to succeed or get as far or be able to prosecute someone for the way that they've wronged them.
Exactly. And nobody wants to do extra work, right?
Right.
But in these instances, the extra work is what is going to save lives in the end. So we need our lawmakers and law enforcement to do that extra work and be educated about what hate crimes are, what hate crimes look like, and what the victims of hate crimes need.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I couldn't have said it better. Yeah. There's a huge lack of understanding and education as far as people in power go that are able to help people within our community, such as law enforcement or chambers of commerce or our delegates as far as like, this is what we can do to help them. Because like you said, why do the extra work? Why figure out what it is? Like, if I wasn't taught this in a training, then I don't need to know this. I don't need to do the extra work. And, you know, the whole point of our job is to go out there and make sure that we're doing the extra trainings, that we're the ones that are being like, here's the statistics, here's the information, and here's what's happening to our people. And I think once this program has really taken off and we've gotten more information out there to people and we're able to be like, hey, these are the calls that we're getting. This is the patterns that we're seeing. This is the population that's being the most affected, and this is how they're being targeted. And we can be like, this is what needs to stop, and here's how to do it, because we know the laws and what counts as a hate crime and what doesn't, and how we can be like, hey, this isn't okay to be happening. It's happening. It's happening way too much, and nobody's doing anything about it, and we want to do something about it. And now we're teaching you how to do something about it. And technically they don't have to do anything with that, and they may not respond to it, but hopefully in teaching them and empowering them to be able to take that next step, at least some people will be like, yeah, I can also make a difference and I can help other people.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And what that made me think of is, this might be a Keith opinion and not an opinion of Epic, so you might have to edit this out. However, I always say that West Virginia is a very unique space. I think that West Virginia has experienced and experiences things that are very unique to us. And a lot of people outside of West Virginia do not understand those things. But I also think that West Virginia is stuck in tradition that is literally killing the state. And a lot of those traditions come into play when people experience harassment and stalking and the things that fall under interpersonal violence or hate crimes. Because I think that a lot of our lawmakers and law enforcement look at things like, that's the way that it's always been done. That's not a big deal. Like, If your neighbor is harassing you,
get over it,
like move or something like that. And that cannot continue to be the answer to the way that we deal with our issues in this state.
I totally agree. I think you're right. I agree with you. I think it is a unique state, and the problems we face are sometimes faced other places, but we have our own set of issues, I guess is the right word, our own set of issues and victimizations that we see, because it is like kind of a closed off state, and it has its own, I mean, like you said, like we are set in our ways, and like whatever has been done this far is what we're going to continue to do, because it's worked so far and we haven't had to take care of the issues so far. And like you mentioned before, a lot of people will gain knowledge and leave and go help somewhere else because they feel like they're not going to be able to make a difference here. And a lot of it is looked at as like, well, if you have an issue, just move. And then people will, they'll just leave because they feel like it's not going to get fixed. But we can't just avoid the problem.
Yeah. It's like John Doe down the street grew up with the sheriff, and John Doe has always been racist. So you just have to deal with John Doe's racism.
Right. I mean, there's no fixing them. They're 60 years old now, and they're stuck in their ways, and there's nothing we can do about it. You can just move to a different neighborhood.
Yeah.
And that's not the way to handle it. I mean, there's issues here that need to be addressed. And I talked about in my last episode how West Virginia is kind of a silent abuser. Like, you know, growing up, and it could have just been because I was sheltered from a lot of it. Growing up, I didn't realize how many issues we had. And then, like, you become an adult and you get out there in the world and you're like, ooh, it's really ugly here. It's ugly everywhere, but it's really ugly in my community, and I had no clue. And now I have this space to be able to do something about it. And am I going to choose to do something about it, or am I going to choose to ignore it like everyone else has been doing for the last 24 years of my life?
Yeah, I say all the time that we are a beautiful, gorgeous state, rolling hills, beautiful mountains, but we have some very serious issues that need to be addressed and need to be addressed immediately in very specific ways. And I hope that this program is doing that and is going to have that type of impact to make that type of change.
I certainly hope so. And I think the work that you've done this far has proven that this program is important and it's needed. And if we can just get the green light to go even further with it, there's so much that we can do for the community. And, you know, like you mentioned before, we have a lot of trainings coming up at Shepherd. And, you know, college kids are one of our biggest vulnerable populations for most of the victimizations that we see, not just hate crimes, but, you know, sexual assault, stalking, a lot of the things that go hand in hand with hate crimes. And it's important to be able to target a population, especially because that's one of the bigger universities in the Eastern Panhandle, to be like, hey, here's this population that needs help, and here's what we can do for you. Oh, and also we have this new program to help victims of hate crimes, and this is what that consists of, and this is what we can do to fix it. And as long as we can just get the word out and let people know, then we'll be able to help and reach more people in the community.
Exactly. I completely agree. And I'm super, super excited about all the opportunities that we have coming up. And I hope to get more. So I hope that listeners have some more opportunities for us. So please reach out, include us in your events, include us in your outreach.
We love partnerships.
Exactly.
I know you touched a little bit on the LGBTQ plus task force, but I know we've also been searching for a space to get the word out about that a little more. So if you'd want to go a little more in depth about what we do with our work as far as the LGBTQ plus task force.
Absolutely. So I am still very new to the task force, but
she's doing great.
Exactly. Thank you. But I'm super excited to be again using the knowledge and skills that I gained while working in DC with the LGBTQ community to bring them back home and serve this community here. So we are a volunteer-based group, a task force that has folks kind of from all over. We have folks from the schools, high schools, middle schools, folks from the colleges, and a lot of folks from other community-based organizations all throughout West Virginia that meets monthly to discuss the ways in which we can provide additional education, additional resources, or additional support to LGBTQ community members living in West Virginia so that their needs are met. We're currently working on restructuring, adding some subcommittees, and just really focused on doing as much advocacy work as we can in West Virginia, because we know that that need is there.
Yeah. So if anyone is part of any organization and they want to represent that organization that's in our community in the Eastern Panhandle, or even further in West Virginia, honestly, I feel like most of our listeners are probably here, though. So if anyone is part of any organization and they're like, hey, I didn't know about this, but I want to represent them, please reach out to us. You can reach out to Keith, or you can reach out to my email. That's comcoordinator@swcinc.org. So either of us and either of our emails work for that. We can get you in and get an invite for the LGBTQ plus task force. And as Keith said, we're trying to make some subcommittees. One of our biggest things that we've touched on recently, especially because of some of the legislature that's been passed federally, but even statewide and even countywide, we've had some issues recently. And a lot of it is pushed under the rug and it's kind of hidden into like a week before they're going to talk about things. And then you don't have any representation there. And we're trying to make a subcommittee where if anyone knows of any legislature that's being passed that we want representatives to go and either stand for it or stand against it, depending on what's being passed, to be able to fight for the rights of the people in the LGBTQ plus community. And we have a lot of people that are willing to go and want to go. We're obviously looking for more, but our biggest issue is just learning and knowing what's happening, because a lot of it is hush hush until it's time. And then we can't get out of work and we can't go and we don't have enough people to show up. And if we have a group space where people can be like, and we talked about maybe creating a Facebook page for this, for people to be like, hey, you know, this is what's happening in this county, or this is what's happening with our state legislature this week, and this is what we need to represent. So if anyone has any extra ideas, please reach out to us about how to get this started, or if you want to join, you know, if you send it to my email, I have like specific questionnaires for the Epic Echo, which is our podcast that you're listening to right now. There's a comment form and stuff. And a lot of people don't interact with that, and I wish more people would. I've gotten very minimal comments since I started in April and I've gone through, and a couple of the ones I've gotten have been like junk comments, spam comments that aren't even, like, they're not even legit comments. But if anyone has any actual input that they want for either topics for the Epic Echo or things that we can do differently, or any suggestions, or specifically because of this episode, about ways to reach out to more people to get a group started to help with the legislature that's being passed around the LGBTQ plus community, we would really love some input.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are there any questions you have for me, or any topics you feel like we didn't cover that you'd really like to discuss?
No, I actually think that this has been great. So thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for coming. Yeah, I'm really thankful you were able to join us.
I appreciate that so much. I was so nervous before getting on here. So
I knew you were going to do amazing.
Thank you for making me comfortable.
I had no doubt. The first time I did it, I was very nervous. And then like 5 minutes in, I was like, this is a lot more chill than expected. Like the expectations were very different. But I can understand the nervousness, because I've definitely felt that way as well. So, but thank you for taking time out of your day.
Absolutely.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Epic Echo. To suggest topic ideas, guest recommendations, or even just to ask questions you'd like us to answer on air, please find us on social media at the Epic Echo Podcast or on our website at epicwv.org/epic-echo.